either one of these any good?
Wow, this is a good movie.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, the director from yesterday doesn't think so.
It stinks.
You're sorry. You waste all our film.
It's so bad.
Well, look at this. We're getting dangerously close to summer movie season. Man, it's creeping up on us, but not there yet. But we've got some good stuff to talk about this week, and welcome to it. This is the Screening Room Podcast. She is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And we are from madwolf.com. Let's start out on the tennis court. Tashi, a former tennis prodigy turned coach, turned her husband into a champion. But to overcome a losing streak, he needs to face his ex-best friend and Tashi's ex-boyfriend in challengers.
What are you going to do now?
Unfortunately, my only skill in life is hitting a ball with a racket.
I want you to be my coach.
I want you to be my coach.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl? Come here.
Which one of us? This is a game about winning the points that matter.
I don't need to play mind games with you.
Come have a cigarette with me. I have to talk to you.
I don't smoke, and I'm not talking to you.
He's not in love with you.
What makes you think I want someone to be in love with me?
Hey, I love you.
I know. You wish you never ever
met her at all. So this is the latest from Luca Guadagnino. And first of all, we look forward to anything he makes. And second of all, man, this guy's got range.
Yeah, he does. And this is, first off, as you might expect if you've seen any of his films, this is gorgeously shot.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting because it's tennis-centric. And, you know, I'm a tennis fan.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a tennis fan, this will even be more enjoyable. But you don't have to be. In fact, it struck me while watching this, it's so smartly written and put together that you could drop this into another setting. It would still work. But Guadagnino, you know, plays upon the competition angle and the tennis angle so well that it fits together so well. This is incredibly engrossing and compelling. This is one where it's a full 2 hours. Not one moment did I think it dragged at all. You're really caught up in these characters. They're very distinct and they're messy entanglements in their history and their future because it's so interestingly put together. It's set around this one match, like the synopsis says. You've got the two ex-best friends facing each other on the court. You've got Patrick, played by Josh O'Connor, and he played, I guess, Prince Charles in The Crown.
And we just saw him in La Chimera last week.
Oh, that's right. Okay. And then, from right here in our home base of Columbus, Ohio, we've got Mike Feist, who was so good in West Side Story.
Oscar worthy.
He's back as Art Donaldson. Now, Art, Mike Feist, his character has been very successful in tennis, and he's won some Grand Slams. In fact, all he needs is the U.S. Open for the career Grand Slam. His ex-best friend Patrick, not so much. He's on the circuit, but he's broke, and he's just getting by. And they both have a long history with Tashi, and she is Mike's wife, Art's, the character's name, Art, his wife, and they have a child. And as you probably have seen in the trailer, she was an up-and-coming. She was going to be the next star when they met playing on the junior circuit. And then Art and Tashi went to Stanford together while Patrick went pro early. And then she suffered a horrific knee injury, and that pretty much ended her career. And in the years since then, she has married Art. They have a young child, and now she is his coach. And so they are the two ex-best friends. The guys are facing each other on the court, and that's when the movie starts jumping back and forth, and you see how they met, and then it comes back to the present day, and then back a few years, and then forward a few years, and you get all these pivotal moments in their very complicated relationship, and it's fascinating. First of all, the characters are written so well, and they're performed so well, and the writer is Justin Kiritsis. Hope I pronounced that right. But I was interested to know, to find out, that he is married to Celine Song.
That's right.
Who just had great success with Past Lives.
Which and is also about, about you know, a romantic triangle of sorts.
That goes back and forth
in
the timeline
a
little
exactly,
bit.
Yeah.
This is almost like it's very cynical cousin.
Right.
Because you can see those types of, those same types of themes, especially with the triangle.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is much more conniving, and the motivations are murky, and who wants what from whom, and who's got a power play going on, and because she's got these two very different guys that she's involved with over the years, and what does she want from each one, and you know, and how has Tashi compensated when the thing that fueled her, the competition of tennis and the drive to be her best, when that was taken away, how has she compensated, and where do these two guys come into that picture? It's psychological and intimate at the same time, and it holds your attention. It's fascinating. Zendaya is great. All three of them are great. It always starts with the writing. We've said that a million times. And the script is great, and they flesh out their characters so well. And as I said before, it's gorgeously shot. Some of the camera work is just fantastic. Luca will go back and forth to these characters like a volley shot.
Right.
Just go back and forth, like your head is moving in a tennis match.
Yeah, yeah.
Loved it. Also, there's a couple of shots where when the match is going on, the pivotal match that the film is anchored in, and he'll show the crowd, and their heads are going back and forth, but her head is not. It's staring straight ahead right in the middle of these two guys. You know, little things like that are so effective in getting the points across a little more subtly. And it's the cinematography is fantastic. The tennis action is very good.
Right.
They've got, I'm sure they must have had some great tennis coaches. Some of it may be, you know, camera tricks or whatever. But the tennis looks great. There's a few, as it goes on and gets later into the third act, there's some point of view shots from the players that mm-hmm. are interesting. And there's some where they're just firing these forehands right to the camera, almost that makes you want to duck sometimes. There's so many things about it to keep your attention. But at the root of it, this writing and these characters and the story. And you're just completely caught up in what's going to happen. Because I just quite didn't know.
Right.
Is this going to come down to choosing someone over the other? And then once she does, I mean, she's married to one of them. So is she going to completely give up the other one? And her character especially is very, very slippery. You know, what is her end game? And Zendaya does a great, great job of it. And this is one that I think is going to hold up throughout the year. I think already it's one of the best films of the year
right.
so far for many, many reasons. I mean, as a drama that, as I said, you could probably pick up. You could make it a play, I think, really, in a different setting. But it's just Luca does such a fantastic job working around this tennis angle, and also making it very, it's interesting. There's no gratuitous sex in it, but it's very sexy. The lure of sex is everywhere. There's bare skin. You know, the guys are always taking off their shirts. You know, they're sweaty. They're locker rooms. They're real close-up shots. Characters are close together, always intimate. There's just always the lure of physical contact. And sometimes it's down and dirty, and sometimes it's sweet. But it's a fascinating, just really expertly crafted film, and I think it's just great, and by all involved in Challengers, and it's out in really all the theaters now for the weekend. I'll really be interested to see how it does, because it's a very character driven film that also provides a lot of eye candy.
Right.
And well, what else are you looking for? I mean, come on. Go see this movie. It's really, really good, and it's called Challengers, and it's out now. Different type of eye candy next on the big screen, an action crime thriller, a fever dream that follows Boy, a deaf person with a vibrant imagination. When his family is murdered, he is trained by a mysterious shaman to repress his childish imagination and become an instrument of death. It is Boy Kills World.
They're all gonna watch and cheer as you die.
That's me, facing televised execution by breakfast cereal mascots. Not my happiest day. But let me take you back to an even worse one. The day the Vanderkoys killed my family and left me deaf and mute. So, I made a three-step plan. Step one, give myself an inner voice. I took the last one I remembered from this video game. Player one wins! Step two, get stronger. And step three, join a team.
Welcome to the Resistance.
Yeah, go team. The mission is simple. Make the Vanderkoys pay for what they have done. Insert crazy action montage.
So Bill Sarsgaard is doing the shirtless montage now, trying to be maybe the hottie that his older brother is. Of course, he's got, I don't know, there's like seven.
I know, I know.
But I think you know the one I mean.
Yeah, he's cut up in this one and raring to go. And this is not as far as, and we've said a million times, and we've said many times, we're not gamers.
No.
This seems like it would be an adaptation of a game.
Right.
I don't believe it is. Mm. But that's how it is structured by a co-writer and director, Moritz Moore. It is a vengeance, like up the level,
right,
vengeance type of tale. But it starts as when this boy is a young boy. And this is in a dystopian near future. And there's this ruling family called the Vanderkoys. At the top is the matriarch, Hilda, played by Famke Janssen. And every year they have this culling, which is kind of a riff on the Hunger Games, mm-hmm, where the dissidents against the ruling family are just taken out and murdered. And one of these cullings, they take out Boy's family. And that attack, he survives. It leaves him a deaf mute. And then in the years that follow, until we catch up with him grown, he trains with his shaman to be an instrument of death and take his revenge. But he has adopted an inner voice that we hear, and he took that inner voice from his favorite video game. And the voice you will recognize, it's a long-time voice actor, H. John Benjamin. Most people will know he's one of the main voices in Bob's Burgers, but you'll know him from a lot of things. A great voice. And so he provides the voiceover that really tries to get snarky. It really tries to get Deadpool-esque meta, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, as it makes a riff on the Hunger Games of a Kill Bill in there as well. And it's amusing at times, but it never gets to that, in gaming parlance, expert level of self-awareness that I think it aspires to, like a Deadpool. I will say the action is staged very well. If that's what you're into, just some mindless violence, this will fit the bill. It's bloody as all get out as he goes after this family that took out his family. And you'll see not only Famke Janssen, but Charlton Copley pops up again.
Sure, yeah.
Michelle Dockery. And as Bill and Jessica Roth from Death Day, Happy Death Day, and
right,
those
right,
films,
right, yeah,
she plays the head of security for the family. That's very Kill Billish as well.
For sure.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of frenetic action, and it's staged as a gaming type of thing. I think the gamers will really appreciate this. And while I thought the action was well staged, it also just is more of that empty violence. It reminded me about 10 years ago of that movie Hardcore Henry.
Right, exactly,
yeah,
yes.
That point of view thing.
Yes.
Which was a gimmick, I get it, but to what end? There are multiple references to states of delirium, and as Boy continually has bickering conversations with the ghost of his dead sister, he's set up as sort of an unreliable narrator until the story takes a really big pivot and it reveals its twist, and then much effort and exposition is made in making sure that we get it and making sure that we understand what's going on, which is really not that hard to understand. But then it becomes maybe the bigger question is, why should we care that much? It just seemed as empty as, well, if something happens to Boy here, we'll just hit play again and reset. You don't have that caught up in it.
For
and
sure.
Is it looking to be emotionally connective? Well, maybe not. It's not the deepest drama in the world. But going back to something like Deadpool, I mean, that's what it seems this kind of a film is, the vibe is aspiring to be. And it's entertaining. It just never quite gets to that level. I think it's awfully forgettable. But for a certain segment of the the audience, which I admit we are not in. I think it could be very, very thrilling and just seem like one of those video games that they love to play. So if that's your bag, I think you will get a kick out of it. And if it's not, it's still enjoyable action. I mean, bloody. But it is well put together. And that is on the big screen now. This is starting this weekend, called Boy Kills World. Let's stay on the big screen for a romantic sci-fi drama. The plot is set partly in a near future in which artificial intelligence is in control of everyone's lives and human emotions are perceived as a threat. Another time shifter. This one is called The Beast.
Il y a une bête prête à bondir.
Don't be afraid.
Quelqu'un va mourir. Peut-être vous, peut-être un proche.
What is stronger? Your fear or your love for me?
Because you think I love you. You're here.
You told me a hidden beast would appear.
Did you think I was crazy?
You.
Well, this is, the cast is led by Lea Seydoux and George Mackay. So right there, you know that they're going to be good.
Oh, yes. They're excellent. They are excellent. And it's a fascinating movie. And it takes you through, you begin in 1910 Paris. You crisscross back and forth. Eventually, you're in 2014 LA. Then you're also in 2044 Paris. And the AI takes place in 2044. By that point, AI has become sort of the default kind of alpha population. And so to get a good job as a human, you have to prove that you're not all that human, right? That you're more like your emotions are very level. And it's a great metaphor for sort of at the root of this is the idea that, you know, an unruly heart is what makes you a human, even though it also makes you miserable, right? But the core concept is Lea Seydoux's character in all three timelines, she has this overwhelming fear that doom is knocking, mm-hmm. right? And so for that reason, she tends toward safety, even though safety is not the thrill that her heart desires. And so in each timeline, at about the time that she meets George Mackay's character, this is where her unruly heart wants to go. And at the same time, that is also doom knocking. So it's a fascinating, weird, it's a very romantic film, but not exclusively romantic, because even though Mackay's character in some of the lifetimes is just this romantic character, in the 2014, he is patterned after the actual first sort of incel, mass murderer, the first man who sort of made a YouTube of how he deserved women that he wasn't getting, and he killed someone. So it's a fascinating way that the director and co-writer, Bertrand Bonello, twists around all of the themes that he keeps developing in each timeline. They echo in every timeline, but they're never exactly the same at all. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating thing that he does. He also, you see dolls echo across timelines because of this idea of like sort of this perfection that is very much not human. It's very much a facade that is sort of disregards that messy, alive nature that humans have.
But you mean a facade? Sorry, Kevin Hart reference. Yeah, this one we should say it's a little longer. It's 2.5.
It is, yeah.
And it's partly in French.
Yes, it's mostly in French, although there is some English as well. And it's just gorgeous, too. It is absolutely beautifully filmed. It's a fascinating movie. And Mackay is great, especially because his character, while a smaller character in each timeline, really changes dramatically without changing. I mean, what he's is able to mine without becoming a wildly different person. It's a little alarming, really. But mainly, Seydoux is just magnificent in every timeline. And she's such a good actor. She's so good in everything. So, and it's just a sumptuous film. Really smart. Very much. I didn't particularly expect to like it nearly as well as I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, both of them have proven themselves to be good pretty much all the time.
Yep.
So that's not a surprise. And that is called The Beast, and it's in theaters now. Well, let's go to one that's in select theaters and also on VOD. It's the latest Cronenberg film. Oh, not David. Oh, not Brandon. There's a new Cronenberg in town, Caitlin Cronenberg. This film that follows the wake of an environmental collapse that is forcing humanity to shed 20% of its population, and a family dinner erupts into chaos when a father's plan to enlist in the government's new euthanasia program goes horribly awry. It's called Humane.
What is going on?
We've decided to enlist.
Hi, I'm Bob.
It's them!
Arthur Early.
You're not gonna like this, but we're here to collect two bodies.
I already told you Dawn left.
And that's unfortunate.
Oh!
But the rules are the same for everybody.
I know we're family and all, but if Bob needs a second body, it's not going to be mine.
What are they still doing in the house?
You know, based on my experience in similar situations, I want to say, yeah, killing one another.
You think I'm the bad guy, but I'm doing important work to save the planet.
We can get through this, but we have to stick together.
It's been a hell of a night, huh?
Well, you say Cronenberg, and we say yes, please.
Exactly. This is, you know, one thing Brandon Cronenberg definitely had follows so far anyway, thematically in his father's, you know, body horror expertise, we
yes.
should say.
Yes.
This one takes a little bit of a different angle.
Yeah, which is a little bit funny because a few years ago, not too many, just a couple of years ago, Caitlin Cronenberg co-directed with her father, David Cronenberg, the short film The Death of David Cronenberg. And it's great, and it's a fascinating movie. This one, her first feature, although she has made other shorts, it is definitely not body horror.
No.
You know, it's not one of those squeamish, you know, as her father and brother have just really mastered. It is it's much more of a political satire, family drama horror. And to that end, a lot of it is quite good. The performances are great. Really, really good. And I think that there's a lot of interesting things to be said here. Jay Baruchel, of course, is good. Peter Gallagher is very good. Emily Hampshire, I thought, was really fun as just unabashedly, unapologetically terrible, a terrible person. She
yeah.
was a lot of fun on screen, really chewed the scenery.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, once it gets moving, you have a sort of a Ready or Not type of vibe because they all come back home for this family dinner. And as the synopsis says, that's when Peter Gallagher and his wife, they're very privileged and they have decided to do this, quote unquote, what they're calling an enlistment. And do euthanasia and basically die to help out the government and to help save the planet because of this climate catastrophe. And of course, the rest of the family not on board with that. And before you know it, before they can carry it out, Peter Gallagher's wife is nowhere to be found.
Right.
She takes off. So when the company that's in charge of administering this euthanasia shows up, led by Bob, who's played by Enrico Colantoni, who you know his face.
Oh, yeah.
For years he was on that TV show Just Shoot Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's really brings the darkly comic aspect
of this.
Oh,
he steals every scene.
Yeah. So he shows up and he says, "Well, I'm sorry that she's gone, but the contract called for two bodies. I need two bodies."
Right.
And then he just leaves them to figure it out.
Yeah. And you know, and it's a great concept. It really is. And when they do that, there are certain times where they really pick an interesting scab about how, you know, you would trust the government, but of course what they're doing with this enlistment is they're paying the family of the people who enlist. So what winds up happening is really, really good people whose family doesn't have money enlist, which is to say they are killing off the poor people in the world, and all of the privileged people, all of the douchebags that you don't want to survive, are going to survive.
Yeah, and the script, it was written by Michael Sparaga, and I think one of the telling lines is when Bob says, "Well, you know, the rules apply to everyone." Well, do they?
Right.
Because there are always reasons and always ways that the rich can skirt those rules.
It's, you know, and I liked moments when they dug into that, but on the whole, I felt like it almost felt like it was salient 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I just felt like a lot of the quips and the humor and the points didn't feel like today.
Yeah.
And in one point that you mentioned when we were watching it, Jay Baruchel's character says, "I don't see color," which again, I mean, that would have felt dated, I think, a decade ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel a little dated. It still has its fun moments,
and
it's not that the themes that they're going after are not worthy. They are. It just seems like it's a little obvious and going down some well traveled roads here in what it's saying. But the performances are good, like you said, and it has some fun to it.
It does. I have to say that there are two. And they're not plot holes. It was clearly a specific choice that was made. But there are two different sort of plot points that the film chose not to clarify that felt like cheats to me because they would have been hard to write around. They would have been hard to explain. So they just leave it to your imagination. Mm-hmm. But they were two very specific points where it would have been hard to explain how this happened. And that, again, it just felt a cheat.
Yeah, and the ending left us that was one of them. Yeah, the ending left us a little cold, like, oh, is that okay? Is that what happened?
And, it reminded me a little bit of Abigail from last week in that, first of all, we're locked inside of a really fancy house, but that now there are no characters that you like. There is a young girl who sits outside. I mean, you like her well enough, but I think you know she's going to survive. You're not rooting for any of them to survive. If they all died, you'd have been, okay, that's fine. So that's a little bit odd. I think that does keep you from really connecting with a movie. Mm-hmm. But still, it's smart. It's worthwhile.
Yeah, yeah. And it's definitely some fun there for the debut as a director for Caitlin Cronenberg, feature director. It's in select theaters now and on VOD called Humane. Let's go back to theaters for a foreign language film, horror film. The Village still holds many mysteries. Pieces of the mystery are revealed, including the terror of the most feared entity, namely Badarahui. This is called Dancing Village, The Curse Begins.
This is the latest from horror filmmaker Kimo Istanbul, and it's an interesting movie. It's very slow moving. It is fully 2 hours. It might be a little over 2 hours, and there were more than a few times where I thought, I'm not sure this movie needs to be this long. But it's weird, and that's never a bad thing when you're watching a horror movie. It's about a woman who returns to her mother's tiny rural village that she doesn't even know how to get to because her mother has taken horribly ill, horribly ill. And she thinks that if she returns this bangle to the village, maybe her mom will be okay. And what it turns out is the village was cursed by this evil demon who chooses a dancer every year to take to the netherworld to serve her. And when the lead's mother ran away with the jewel, she broke the curse. And so nobody had to do this anymore. And now, somehow, the demon found the woman and wants her jewel back. And once she gets her jewel back, then these dancers will be chosen again. So does that seem like a very weird plot? It does. And it is. It's a weird plot. But it's kind of fun. It's spooky. There's some sort of, it's not really gore as much as it is human rot that you see periodically. I feel like there were some really, really great shots that didn't happen often enough. They very often the movie doesn't, I think, take advantage of some of the creepiness that it sets up. And again, it just goes on for too long. It takes too long to get to the core plot. I feel like if they had trimmed fully 30 minutes from this movie, it would have really been entertaining from start to finish. As it is, it drags quite a bit, but it's not a bad film. I enjoyed it for the most part.
And that is in theaters now, Dancing Village, The Curse Begins. And one more, let's go to Shudder for residents of a rundown French apartment building battling against an army of deadly, rapidly reproducing spiders. Yeah. More spiders. This one's called Infested.
Sure.
We just had spiders a few weeks ago called Sting.
Yes, and
More freaky spiders.
I highly recommend a double feature of this and Sting, which is actually essentially how I watched them. I watched them back to back. One, Sting is really fun because, first of all, it's fun. And second of all, it's one alien spider that just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's this just absolute nightmare. This one, Infested, is a spider that gets much bigger, but also gives birth to a lot of other spiders, and they get much bigger.
They do that.
And they give birth to a lot of other spiders, and they get much bigger. I love apartment building horror.
Mm-hmm.
I love when you do it well, when you feel trapped, and then you can use the crawl spaces and the elevator shafts and, you know, trying to get down to the parking garage, you know, something like Evil Dead, The Evil Dead Rise, things like that. I love when that is done well, and this is done well. And spiders are creepy. And this movie knows it, and spider webs are creepy, you know. And,
oh, come
and
on, Charlotte's Web was sweet.
When they're going to drop on you, yeah. And you're like, I watched this movie, and I did. I found myself, like, rubbing my shoulders and my back and my head. It's really effective in the way that it develops that just creepiness about spiders. But what it does better than anything is it has this lived-in neighborhood feel of it. And you love these characters who are all screw-ups, absolute screw-ups. And it's their fault. Like, they did this. And you just, you know, the performances are so good. And the performances, like the chemistry among the actors is so good that you really feel like this is a neighborhood inside this building. And it makes you sad when they inevitably die and die horribly.
Ouch.
I know. It's really, really good. If you like horror films. If you don't like horror films, avoid it. Like a plague of spiders.
Well, if you don't like horror films, you're not going to have Shudder.
That's right.
Probably.
But if you like horror films and you don't have Shudder, why don't you have Shudder? Because then they just show up with gems like this one. I loved it.
On Shudder now, and that is called Infested. All right, let's head off to see if there are any spiders in the lobby.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Checking back in the lobby with Daniel Baldwin, a.k.a. the Schlocketeer, for news and notes and tidbits and things. Stuff. What's your stuff?
Well, Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, will arrive on VOD on May 14th. You can get your big, punchy monkey and lizard on that date. And then on May 17th, this is a bit of an odd one that came out of nowhere, Shudder will premiere Night Watch Demons Are Forever, which is a sequel to the 1994 Dutch thriller Night Watch. Same writer-director, Ole Bornedal, and he brought back the original three cast members, which of course includes Nicolas Coster-Waldau. And I haven't seen the original, but I did see the 1997 remake with Ewan McGregor. So might have some catch-up to be playing myself there.
Okay.
And moving on, Richard Linklater's Glenn Powell starring action rom-com Hitman is, of course, coming to Netflix on June 7th, but it is now getting a limited theatrical run starting May 24th.
Nice.
So, yes. Hopefully it'll come to everyone's area.
Mm-hmm.
And then also on May 24th, there's a sci-fi action thriller called Atlas premiering on Netflix that stars Jennifer Lopez, Simu Liu, Mark Strong, and Sterling K. Brown. Nice lineup there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Warner Brothers has moved up the theatrical release of Ishana Shyamalan's The Watchers by 1 week to June 7th. Also hitting on June 7th is a theatrical re-release, new remastered cut of Tom Tykwer's groundbreaking 1998 thriller Run Lola Run.
Oh.
Yeah.
98, wow.
And then continuing the June 7th of it all, Vertical Releasing has set a June 7th theatrical release for The Exorcism, which is the directorial debut of one of the writers of The Final Girls, and it stars Russell Crowe, Sam Worthington, Ryan Simpkins, Samantha Mathis, and David Hyde Pierce. And Shudder already has it earmarked for a streaming release later in the year, but we don't have a date for that yet.
Okay.
And two more for you. Paramount has pushed back the release of their animated film Transformers 1 by 1 week. It will hit theaters on September 20th now, and because they moved that back a week, DreamWorks Animation has pushed back the release of their animated film The Wild Robot by 1 week to September 27th. A little bit of a domino action going there.
Seems like there always is.
Animated robots.
Zigging and zagging.
Yeah.
Always. All right, you can always catch up the latest news. Catch it from Daniel. You can find him on the socials at The Schlocketeer. Thanks, as always.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, hey, before we talk about next week, I want to say thank you to Mr. Mehta. He brought his class, his radio/podcasting class from Hyatt's Middle School right here in Columbus by the studio, and we recorded a little podcast. They had some great questions for us, and that was a lot of fun. So thank you, Mr. Mehta. Say hi to all your kids.
Nice.
All right. Looking ahead to next week. Got something we've been looking forward to. The top of the list, The Fall Guy.
Also, I saw the TV glow.
And Jerry Seinfeld's Pop-Tart movie. Bring it on. It's going to be on Netflix, called Unfrosted.
Also, New Life.
Documentary. Oh, this is good because it's coming into town here next weekend, and we'll be doing a Q&A with the director. Documentary called The Blues Society.
Also, Prom Dates.
In the Company of Kings.
And Wildcat.
All right. That is all next week. But this week, a lot to chew on. The Challengers and Boy Kills World and The Beast and all this time shifting and romance. What's going on? Let's talk about it. We can always keep the conversation going anytime. You can find us easily on Facebook, on Instagram, on Threads at Mad Wolf Columbus, the main website you can always find as well for all our written reviews and other fun stuff like our horror movie only podcast called Fright Club. All there for you at madwolf.com. Whichever way you choose to keep in touch, we love it. I'd love to hear from you. And until then, until next week, she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And this is the Screening Room Podcast.
See ya.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner. Bye.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.